Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
An old man named Hyder Simpson dies and finds himself walking along the Eternity Road with his faithful dog Rip, who had recently passed alongside him. Soon he encounters a gate manned by a friendly gatekeeper, who begins to check him in on his clipboard for his intake into heaven. Invited inside, he begins to enter, clutching one end of Rip's leash, but is stopped short. The gatekeeper asserts that pets aren't allowed in, but it was all right. They had their very own heaven just yonder, down the road. Hyder, steadfast in his loyalty to his canine companion, refuses the entry. Any place that's too highfalutin for Rip is too fancy for me, he declares. Much to the gatekeeper's insistence that he come inside, much to his assurance that Rip had his own heavenly existence, heck, he'd even walk him down himself. And finally, much to the keeper's dismay at Hyder's rebuff, the old man continues walking down the road, with Rip trotting alongside him. Further down, Hyder and Rip take respite on the side of the path, unsure of what may become of them. Suddenly, a young, chipper fellow happens along. He's happy he found Hyder. He was an angel, meant to welcome him to heaven. It was just through this gate here. Hyder shares their earlier encounter with a man welcoming them into what he was claiming was heaven, and how they kept on trucking because they wouldn't allow him to take Rip inside. The angel, more serious now, informs Hyder Rip could most certainly join him in real heaven, and it was a good thing he didn't go in the first gate. That was actually the gate to hell. And they worked hard to trick people, lure them inside, who could then never leave once they rounded the bend in the path. If Rip had been allowed a step into the front gate, he would have immediately smelled the brimstone and given up the ruse. A man will walk right into hell with both eyes open, the angel states, but even the devil can't fool a dog. The angel then tells him his beloved wife, Rachel, will be along shortly to meet them. But the important thing to take away from this Twilight Zone episode is that the dog went to heaven along with his owner. Isn't that just the sweetest? Now, I am using this opportunity to tell this story because it's awesome. If you've never seen it, this episode is called The Hunt. It is on Prime right now. Go watch. It's a good one. But it is only superficially connected to today's show. I told the story because I like it, but it also demonstrates an opinion that a lot of people hold. And that opinion is that all dogs do, in fact, go to heaven. Cats, too. And all other animals and living organisms and creatures under the sun that you could think of. Some polls and studies indicate a whopping 75 to 80% of pet owners believe that their beloved fur children have a place in some eternal realm. So it goes without saying, these folks believe animals have souls, that there is some piece of an animal's energy and personality that carries on following death, which is an important key to our focus today. If humans have souls, and so do animals, and human souls are faced with a choice upon death to cross over that boundary so often described in near-death experiences or remain here on Earth in ghostly form, do animals have this same choice? And if so, for what reasons? And for whatever reason, what might that look like? Today we end our season's deep dives with a look at ghost pets and other animals. Welcome back to the Paranorm Girl podcast. I am your host, Kristen. This one proved to be a lot more difficult than originally surmised. I think I am too emotionally invested, you guys. So, ghost pets and animals. Yes. Is that actually a thing? Is it common? What does that look and feel like? Is my passed-on fur baby potentially an earthbound ghost? If so, are they stuck? These might be questions we would ask when considering this phenomenon. We are working from a place today that animals do indeed have souls or soul energy capable of existence following physical life. I think there is more than enough circumstantial evidence and anecdotal accounts pointing to this being the case, and when it comes to ghosts and apparitions of these creatures, there is also enough evidence and accounts supporting that possibility. According to investigator and researcher Joshua Warren, noted in his book, Pet Ghosts, Animal Encounters from Beyond the Grave, a majority of ghost pet encounters take place in the days or weeks immediately following their death. Folks describe seeing shadowy, flickering, or slightly glowing figures. In many accounts, they disappear from view around an obstruction and then are nowhere to be found, or in many cases, simply disappear right in front of people's eyes. People also report disembodied physical touching, like the feeling of your dog hopping up on the bed and curling up beside you, as they used to do in life. Disembodied smells, disembodied sounds like phantom barking, growling, meowing, nails on hardwood, jangling tags. Mr. Warren takes a very specific route in identification within the ghost animal world and separates it into two types and four subtypes of entity. His two types are ghost animals and ghostly animals. Ghost animals, he says, must have at one point been a physical living thing and is now in some energetic, apparitional form. The ghost animal can be separated into two subtypes, entity, meaning intelligent, and imprint, meaning residual. We'll talk about both today. Ghostly animals, on the other hand, have a bit more supernatural flair and may have abilities or traits outside of what might be restricted to our physical basis of reality or known physical laws. He separates ghostly animals into elemental and harbinger. Elementals may have never been in the physical, though they might now represent a physical creature. The example he shares is the hellhound of British lore. Looks like a dog, may sound like a dog, but it's often seen with red glowing eyes and is usually quite large, too large. According to Warren, it will look like a real creature, but there's going to be something not quite right about it. Harbingers, however, can very possibly have been or currently are living creatures. These animals are often energetically being used to some purpose, nefarious or otherwise. His example is the witch's familiar. I can't say I completely agree with Mr. Warren's separations and distinctions, though I do appreciate the breaking down and simplification, and it is based on his own years of investigation, so, you know, who the hell am I? For our purposes today, we'll mainly be focusing on the ghost animal type that he designates. However, elementals will come up again just as a point of comparison. Mr. Warren notes in his book an observation that many others who have researched ghost pets have shared, that the most commonly reported ghost animal is going to be the domestic cat. There could be a very sad reason for that commonality if we consider one of the reasons humans may decide to stick around in ghostly form is due to a sudden or violent death. Cats can often encounter their end at the front side of a speeding car or a violent, unfair demise at the hands of a human or other animal. So, might be something to that particular ghost creation theory. Now, pulling the camera back and looking at the wide shot of this phenomenon, while ghost dogs and cats are certainly going to be most commonly reported, there are plenty of reports of other kinds of animals. And within those sighting stories, we can clearly see examples of both intelligent and residual encounters. Let's go ahead and begin with some of those lesser talked about, lesser known ghost animal sightings. One of the strangest ghost animal cases that I came across was the Highgate chicken. You heard of the Highgate vampire? Yeah, they also got a phantom chicken. According to the Real British Ghosts website, in the bitter cold spring of 1626, Sir Francis Bacon was traveling through Highgate with his friend, Dr. Witherbone, discussing methods other than salting to preserve food. Hot topic of debate at the time, that food preservation. Staring out at the snow through the carriage window, Bacon suddenly proposed freezing as a method. "What the devil, Bacon? Refrigeration?" I imagine Witherbone saying incredulously. "By gum, chap, of all your wild and outlandish ideas, this one may just land you with the loonies. Hominominominominominomina. Madman, I say. Hominominominominomina." So, to prove a point, Bacon decides to buy a chicken from the next farm that they come across. Once it's killed, plucked, and cleaned, Bacon runs around, packing it with snow, and then sticks it inside of a bag, also packed with snow, thus creating the world's first frozen chicken. He would die from pneumonia a few days later. His experiment was successful, though, according to a letter he wrote on his deathbed, so that's good. Invented a new form of food preservation, died from a cold gone wrong. True story. Anyway, beginning soon after the event, and even up to recent times, strange reports have surfaced of a half-plucked chicken running around in frantic circles in the area. Should anyone attempt to approach the animal, it disappears into thin air or vanishes straight into a wall. The Highgate chicken, everybody. The Real British Ghosts website also relays a short story about a ghost goose. They said this story was originally relayed by Elliot O'Donnell, early investigator and author. The story is about a farmer riding along a road in Melsonby when his horse suddenly is startled and begins to run, frightened of something. The farmer can't quite get the horse under complete control, but he gets a hold of the reins as they continue to fly down this road. He suddenly notices something beside him, traveling neck and neck at their quick pace, a large white goose. The story describes the goose waddling and yet keeping up with the farmer. They came upon a churchyard, and the goose suddenly turns sharply, dematerializing and materializing again as it enters the cemetery through a closed, locked gate. They said this particular bird had been seen several times by several people. This example of a ghost bird was told to me personally by Eric Freeman Sims, host of the Unseen Paranormal podcast and owner of the incredibly haunted Night House. Randomly, After purchasing the night house, he was messaged by someone who'd grown up in the area and had been in the house when he was a kid. He'd known the Roger family at the time, and he knew they had a pet macaw. The man messaged Eric asking him if he'd heard the parrot yet. Eric had no idea the Rogers had owned a bird, and nope, hadn't heard anything of the sort. Well, not too long after, on one of the devices he leaves running in the home to catch activity, he caught what sounds like the squawk of a parrot. Pretty distinct noise, and unlike other birds that are native to the area. He says he can't prove it, beyond a doubt. Maybe someone's live pet macaw escaped and posted up right outside his window. Who knows? But with as active and consistent as the haunting is there at the night house, I wouldn't be shocked at all to know he's got a residual ghost bird hanging around. Raphael Septian 1 from Reddit commented on a thread about ghost animals and communications that he had been eating dinner with his mother when both of them heard their pet parrot screech from just across the room. Their pet parrot, who had died a year prior. If ghost birds are your jam, there's a ton more stories about them included in Elliot O'Donnell's book, Animal Ghosts or Animal Hauntings and the Hereafter. A well-known ghost animal, but one I just don't think anyone is prepared to experience, is the monkey that haunts the Athelhampton House in Dorset, England. The legend is a little squirrely, but the version I've read the most is that the Martin family had a beloved pet monkey who was free to wander the home at all times. A daughter of the Martins, heartbroken following an unhappy love affair, climbed a hidden set of stairs and entered a hidden room, closing the door behind her. What she didn't realize is that her pet monkey had followed her into the hidden room. She would end her life unaware the poor monkey was trapped. It ultimately starved to death before the search for the missing pair would discover the hidden space. There are sources that claim nobody has ever actually seen the phantom monkey, but you can hear him scratching in vain behind the wood paneling of the walls. Others claim that people have seen him waking suddenly in the middle of the night to find him staring with intensely bright, expectant eyes, and yet others claim this monkey, as nice and friendly as he is, has a strange habit of scratching his junk and swinging around, as monkeys are wont to do, before vanishing in front of their eyes. This legend is just a little too legendy for me to base any kind of real theories on, but there is something to it, I think. The Athelhampton House is notoriously haunted by numerous spirits, but their claim to spectral fame is this monkey. Now here's a story from 1815 about a deadly encounter with a ghost bear.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
On a chilly, foggy January night, a young sentry patrolling the Tower of London's grounds walked the corridors of Martin Tower, ready to defend, if the need should arise, the crown jewels housed within. Without warning, from the corner of his eye, from the dark shadows of the hall, emerged a massive shape. He whirled about face to stare into the gaping mouth of a snarling, drooling angry bear. Thinking that this might be one of the menagerie of wild animals kept on the grounds, having escaped, the sentry rushed forward, attempting to plunge his bayonet into the angry animal. There was never a more surprised sentry on the attack when his blade went effortlessly, silently through the vision of the bear and lodged an inch into the heavy wooden door behind it. Terrified, he tugged at his weapon, fruitlessly. Unable to retrieve it, the certainty of his own demise by whatever this was, he fainted and would barely awake the following afternoon, remaining conscious and coherent enough to share his encounter to be recorded by Edmund Swift, who would have his own strange encounter at the tower just a year later. Upon completing his story, the sentry fell back into an unconscious state and would pass away the following morning, the fright of it all just too much to handle. You know what? I hope this was an intelligent haunting. The bear ghost in question was likely one of the bears used for baiting for entertainment at the time, an absolutely awful, abhorrent practice. That animal had every right to be enraged and to wander free wherever he wanted. Poor fella. One ghost animal that might be the last that you'd think of is the phantom pig. There is a well-known piece of folklore local to the Dartmoor area of Devon, England, about a mother sow and her litter of piglets trotting along, eternally searching for food. They are on their way to a dead horse by Cador Gate. The piglets cry out, "Starvin', starvin'." The sow replies, Cador Gate," urging them on. Upon arriving at the gate, they discover another animal has already gotten to the horse, and there is nothing left to eat. Skin and bones," cry the piglets. Hungry, saddened, the family turns around to make their way back to Merripit Hill, growing more emaciated with every step. Somewhere during their journey back, they dissipate into the mist, ready to repeat the sad parade the following night. It's a little dramatic, getting into Jeff the Mongoose territory with talking pigs, but hey, they are highly intelligent creatures. Another rather sad ghost pig story is included in Joshua Warren's book. The author makes note that he changed the names of those involved to protect their privacy, which lends a bit of credence to the account. This salt-of-the-earth type fella buys his family a pig intended for butchering, names it Gabriel, spends a good amount of time fattening it up, fine-tuning the meat, and trying to mentally prepare his son for the inevitable event, though his son, over the course of that year, would obviously grow affectionate and quite fond of the animal. When the time to do the deed grew close, the father was suddenly called out of town to a work trip. When he knew he'd be coming home, though, he called his wife, tells her, have their son take the gun out, get it done with Gabriel, and he would finish up the process once he rolled back into town. Sad, but knowing it had to be done, the son does go out, hesitates for a second in guilt, but then quickly aims and pulls the trigger. The bullet landed right in the head. Gabriel does not die, and would spend that evening thrashing and groaning in pain and traumatized and betrayed in his stall. All night long, the family listened to this. When the father got home the following day, he realized the animal was still alive. He went out to the stall and gruesomely but quickly put Gabriel out of his misery. The butchering proceeded. They prepared Gabriel for Christmas dinner. I imagine it was a bit of a somber event, eating silently, the heavy guilt. Nearing the end of dinner, they began to hear a high-pitched whining. Ignoring it for the wind at first, they soon couldn't ignore it any longer as it grew into grunting, groaning, and finally an undeniable squealing of a pig. Not understanding what was going on, what that could be, there were no other pigs in the area, the father steps out into the cold winter darkness to investigate. After a moment of whipping wind and silence, they hear him scream. They find him on the ground with his leg completely broken and bent in a way it was never designed to go, as if from some impact. He would say he slipped and fell on the ice, but later even his doctor would be shocked such an injury could result from a fall, as he was saying. The family joke later would become that it had actually been Gabriel who mauled his leg in vengeance. I do wonder if Gabriel didn't have something to do with it. The family said they never heard those sounds or had any other odd experiences like it following that night. Ghost horses provide plenty of really good examples of both intelligent and clearly residual hauntings, stories of phantom horses on repeat, cantering across ancient battlefields, and groups of them drawing a spectral carriage or wagon abound. The Roman soldiers marching along with horses at York, the procession of horses with their riders have been reported at 95th and Keene in Chicago. Many old ghost stories include ghost horses in them. However, they are often simply a feature of the story, never the main character. But keep digging, and you can find reports of just that. On the back roads just outside Brennamain in North Wales, reports have surfaced of a phantom white horse almost causing an accident on a few occasions. On one occasion, a man had taken the back roads to avoid police, as his car wasn't legally supposed to be on the road at that time. It was just after dawn when suddenly a huge white horse came over the hedge and into the road. Without thinking, he slammed on his brakes. The car began to spin, and the horse disappeared as quickly as it had come. On another occasion, a couple were on the same road, approaching the same area as the man. Right as they reached it, a big white horse appeared over the hedge and into the road. They slammed on their brakes. The horse vanished. It's been speculated the horse may be connected to a horse skull dug up at one point when the road was being repaired. Dartmoor doesn't just offer a sad parade of hungry piglets. It also has phantom ponies. Sightings of black ghost ponies appearing and disappearing throughout the open areas, rock outcrops, and valleys have been seen, along with a specific one consistently encountered around the town of Hador, nearby a rock outcrop called Saddle Tor. This one in particular will gallop right up on people. There's nothing to be seen, only impending hooves hitting the ground to be heard, and just when you brace for impact, a witness may feel the pass and pull of an icy breeze as the hoofbeats vanish and all grows silent and still. Bramham Park in West Yorkshire is said to be haunted by a group of horses. Not seen as much as they are heard, the horses gallop in the dell near the cricket pitch. This group of phantoms is thought to be the horses lost during the Battle of Bramham in 1408. People still report today sightings or sounds of a horse outside of the Martha Washington Inn, located in Abingdon, Washington County, Virginia. The story goes, in 1864, a Union soldier who'd grown up in Abingdon and had spent some less than awesome time behind Abingdon bars due to rowdy behavior, rode in on his horse, pulled up to the courthouse, and began burning it to the ground, along with several other buildings. Guessing he was still a little sore at his previous treatment, maybe? He continued his task, making his way down the row of buildings, but at the intersection of Main and Church, Confederate soldiers caught up to him and shot him dead. Ever since then, folks have reported seeing a vision of his horse. At times, it's still tied up outside the Martha Washington, or it's grazing on its grounds, or it's wandering up and down the streets, seemingly still waiting around for his rider. Let's go ahead and end on cats and dogs today, the most commonly spotted ghost animals in the world. Now, if we think back to Joshua Warren's definition of the different types and subtypes of animal ghosts, we'll remember he suggested elementals as a ghostly grouping. Again, these are creatures that may have never experienced a physical form, however, may manifest as a representation of a physical creature now, such as the hellhound or black dog of English lore. These creatures are often considered malevolent phantoms and harbingers of death for either the person witnessing it or someone that they know. Though the black dog phenomenon is considered specific to the British Isles, it has been seen elsewhere and could conceivably be getting mislabeled in other areas, seeing the same thing but calling it something different. The earliest known report is from 856 AD in a French church. Midway through the service, the congregation was startled to see a large black dog with fiery eyes manifest in the middle of the room. It's written that this creature ran to and fro as if searching for someone or something before vanishing. There is also a version of a black dog specter in the Appalachians here in the U.S. As I mentioned before, there's often something not quite right about the black dog, especially when we're trying to consider the phenomenon of ghost animals, ghost dogs in this case. Black dogs often have these blazing, glowing red eyes. They're often humongous, said to be harbingers of death, doom, and bad luck, said to specifically haunt church cemeteries and grounds. It's giving something else, if anything, but local folklore. If the black dog were a real manifestation, I think it's pretty clear that it's distinct from what we are talking about today. Could be a cryptid of some kind, maybe? And, you know, same with elemental forms of ghostly cats, such as the demon cat in our nation's capital. The demon cat of D.C., or the D.C. of D.C., is said to haunt the White House and U.S. Capitol. This one is a little tricky, but I think you might agree with me when I say this creature, too, is not really what we're talking about when discussing ghost animals. See if you can catch it. This cat is often seen before presidential elections or tragedies, allegedly spotted prior to Abraham Lincoln and JFK's assassinations. It's seen most often by White House security personnel who describe it as a black or tabby cat. Stories of encounters with it date back to the mid-1800s when cats were set loose in the basement tunnels for pest control, and it's thought this apparition might be a holdover from that time, deciding to hang around following its death. It's said to be the size of a normal cat, except for the times it isn't, when it suddenly grows in height and length from the size of a tiger to that of an elephant, this Clifford of cats, then pounces at its witness, disappearing before it can sink its spectral claws in. Did you catch it? Did you catch the difference? So there you go, the demon cat of D.C. But if we are considering the run-of-the-mill ghost cat or dog, encounters with them are quite a bit more realistic. These encounters are quite often specific to a person who has lost a beloved pet, or the ghost cat or dog in question is, at the very least, often recognizable to the witness. These encounters can be fleeting, are usually unexpected, and more times than not, reassuring to pet owners that their fur babies still exist, that they're still around. It has been noted a lot, like a lot, that a ghost cat or dog will make itself known very briefly or for a brief duration of time, but seems to move on to bigger and better things when their person is reassured or gets to a place that they can better handle their grief. And I get that. Losing a pet is devastating. I can only imagine how reassuring seeing them again would be. Most stories you will hear are of the intelligent ghost variety, But as with any other animal or human ghost activity, there's just always going to be that residual factor to consider. Certain animals appear at certain times in certain places, repeating the same actions because they are on a loop. Dogs and cats are not excluded in this. That can be judged on a case-by-case basis. But to end today's episode, I want to focus in on the intelligent dog or cat ghost and explore its reality. And because the ghost cat and dog story is so much more common than other animal ghost stories and kind of overwhelming, it's hard to pick. I am sharing just a short example or two that's a bit more all-inclusive. There is this online forum dedicated to Long Island. This website has threads and blog entries about beaches, wine tasting, places to eat, things to do in Long Island, stuff like that. Also included, buried in its back rooms, is an ongoing and current thread about ghost cats. This thread and chat began in 2008 and is still ongoing. Long Island, apparently, has a ghost cat epidemic. But I was so stoked to see this, see something like this, as random as it was, because if you start to scroll and read from the earliest post, you get to see in action the ghost cat phenomenon. The entries are split between people encountering their deceased cats and then a surprising number of folks encountering just some random ghost cat that entered their house because, I mean, they're cats, you know? Most of these entries go something like this. Every morning after I wake up, I feel a cat rubbing against my legs, stretching up against my shins. I look down, there's nothing there. Or I'll be lying in bed, settling in for sleep, when I feel the distinct feeling and weight of a cat jumping up on the bed, doing its little tippy-toe walk up the bed. For my cat owners out there, all very distinct feelings, right? Curling up somewhere against my body, purring, making biscuits. I look down. There's nothing there. And my own cat is not even in the room, or is unconscious, snoring away on the pillow right next to my head. Sweetest haunting ever. This is the happy plight of people who encounter the ghost cat. I mean, it does freak some people out. But I'm just telling you right now, I would be thrilled. Honored, dudes. Ghost cat encounters can also often include a visual aspect. I've read a few accounts where folks full-on saw the cat in its normal environment doing whatever, only to find out later that the feline had passed away like the day before the witness saw it. For some, following the passing of their kitty, they might see them out of the corner of their eyes, small translucent cat-shaped shadowy things running around, the clear image of a butt and tail held high, disappearing behind a corner or scampering up the stairs. If there are living pets left behind, people have witnessed them playing with something at their level, chasing or running from something through the house, staring intently at something unseen. All of these things can be what a ghost cat encounter looks like. Not all of it, not always, but this is what's been reported. Like Joshua Warren says, a majority of these encounters occur within days to weeks following a passing. I have come across a few accounts that report seeing the ghost of the cat in question years after the fact. We can't know the motivation for appearing or reasons behind timing, but we can make an educated guess based on our speculations behind why humans become ghosts, sudden violent deaths, a need to right a wrong. Maybe they don't want to leave a loved one behind. Maybe they need the loved ones that they did leave behind to know that they are okay. I think we're a lot more like animals in our motivations than most of us consciously think about. According to Ed Anderson, PhD, we share most of the same wants, needs, desires, emotions, ability of communication, foresight, and regret, individual personality. Why wouldn't we share reasons too? Who is Ed Anderson, you ask? Oh, just a guy who's presented one hell of an argument that animals have souls and are individuals who experience individual afterlife experiences. We'll talk more about that shortly. Ghost dogs. I have spoken with mediums who specialize in afterlife pet communication. They talk about the signs one might receive when encountering their passed-on fur baby. Many of these signs are rather ghost-like in nature. Seeing them, hearing them, feeling them. I have spoken with numerous people who have lost their pet dog and experienced ghostly activity from them. I myself have experienced activity from my passed-on pup. These stories that people tell of seeing, hearing, or feeling the ghost of their dog always makes me tear up. I can't help it. These encounters resemble in many ways those of ghost cats. I know cats and dogs are not the only ones to hold some special place in people's lives, but these animals in particular have become such a regular part of many people's lives. They maintain specific routines and fall into the same behaviors for a long span of time. It is starkly weird when that ceases to happen, but quite noticeable when it continues to happen following their passing. Everyone's experience is going to be different, but ghostly activity that I've read has included nails clicking on the floor, paws padding across carpet, disembodied barks, jangling of tags, lapping of water, squeaking of toys. Some folks report seeing them, too. Walking away, disappearing around corners, quick glimpses out of the corner of eyes. I've seen a few stories of more solid appearances, too. There's this bittersweet story in Alan Zulo's book, Haunted Animals, True Ghost Stories, about a little girl being visited by her pet dog in the hospital after both of them had been hit by a car. And at this point, she was under the impression that her dog was completely fine, as her parents had told her, and had escaped injury. And she was now convinced that he had somehow snuck inside the hospital. He'd even brought his favorite toy. She tells her parents about the visit the next day, and they inform her that they couldn't bring themselves to tell her before, but he'd actually been badly hurt in the accident and had been at the vet's all this time. He'd passed away that night at the exact moment the girl saw him in her room. I guess that would make this appearance an example of an animal crisis apparition, wouldn't it? I actually came across a sort of third man factor slash guardian-esque version of ghost dogs too, which was surprising, but very, very cool to find. So there are numerous stories of a white dog appearing out of nowhere, saving people's lives, and then disappearing, never to be seen again. An example of this can be found in Darren Zanko's book, Ghost Stories of Pets and Animals. There was this woman asleep in bed next to her husband. She suddenly wakes up because she's feeling breath and licking on her hand, looks over into the massive face of a big, drooling, panting white dog. In her immediate panic, because this wasn't her dog, she flung herself up and all the way out over her husband, landing on the floor on his side of the bed, just as an earthquake began to shake the bejesus out of their home. Once it was over, the dog had vanished from their room, and a heavy bedside lamp could be seen smashed and shattered into shards across her pillow. It was heavy enough, she notes, that she could have been seriously injured or killed if it hadn't been for this dog. I was completely unaware of the white guardian ghost dog phenomenon, and I do think, unlike the black dog phenomenon, that these white dog encounters could potentially be the ghost of deceased dogs. If one of your tasks while alive was guarding and security, that might likely be a good motivation for a doggo to want to hang around in ghostly form. Just, you know, keeping up the good work. Encounters with the ghost of our dogs can wildly vary from the incredibly realistic and dramatic to experiences a bit more mundane and subtle and simple, Both can be just as impactful, any level of activity just as meaningful, and depending on the witness and their willingness to accept the event, any encounter to any level makes this phenomenon all the more real to the witness. Which brings me to my own personal experience and a final surprising mental quagmire. My own experience took place years ago. As I recall, it was right as I was launching this show. I was a different person then. I knew a lot less than I do today. And I was a hell of a lot more skeptical. Because in those days, I was still under the impression that I had never had my own experiences. Anything that happened to me that was arguably paranormal had to be explainable by logical means. I was fascinated with the paranormal, open to it, but suffice it to say, my own receptors were, kind of closed off. At that time, it had only been a couple of years since we had had to say goodbye to our dog. I was still deeply mourning his loss. How I would have given anything to have seen his apparition, to hear his nails on the hardwood floors. Anything that would convince me beyond doubt that he still existed. I still struggle to describe the silence and the heaviness of the air in the days after he died. It's indescribably empty of a force. So, yeah, I would have given anything to just know, even though his physical presence was no more, that he was ongoing somehow. And one random day, years after he passed, I would receive signs from him. They weren't cinematic or jaw-dropping by any stretch, but they were undeniable to me. I still miss him. I still cry sometimes when I think about him. But I know he's okay, because he paid me a visit when I needed it. And he also gave me what I needed. If you would like to know the full story, the details of my experience, it has been published in a collection of stories about spirit encounters and communications with them. The book is called It's Not Goodbye, Two More Signs from Beyond, and it is written and compiled by the beautiful, highly talented, and popular previous guest on the program, Ms. Sin Schrader Hill. Keep an eye out and go get you a copy. It will be available for purchase on Amazon next week. Now, this experience of mine plays a part in the quagmire, the impasse that I have encountered here in the final hour, and it is this. I never would have described my dog in ghostly terms. I would have said he was a crossover spirit. Because if he was a ghost, he would have shown up in a certain ghostly way, and he's not stuck, because that would be bad and wrong, and he was a good boy and would never deserve that. You see the state of how I was thinking to begin with? I had a prejudice against ghosts and didn't realize it or how unfair it was until now. But thinking back now, he did some considerably ghostly things, like affected the physical world to give me undeniable signs. Ghost comes with connotations, doesn't it? I even made a point to explain on our first episode this season that we were only examining the earthbound ghost, not the crossed over spirit. I put a divider between the two concepts. Red line, brother, red line. And I have had to really sit and think on this for some time and ask myself why I did that. Is there a boundary between earthbound and out there? Or are ghost and spirit on the other side simply two energetic points on the same afterlife spectrum? Perhaps ghosts are spirits and vice versa, just manifesting differently depending on circumstance, energy, and our perception of them at that moment. Perhaps there is more fluidity between these concepts than we think, between these states. I do still have some thinking to do on this. Before the conclusion episode, I shall let you know where I have arrived at that point. But for now, I want to, at the very least, before we end, answer the questions that I asked at the top of the show. And I think, based on what we have covered today, I can do that. Are ghost pets and animals actually a thing? Yeah, it would appear so. Is this phenomenon common? Even if you remove all folkloric and legend-based stories of ghostly animals, when you really get to looking into personal accounts, books written on the topic, online forums, Reddit, it's a lot more common than you would initially think. I think people assume that it's not common, and therefore not really a thing, because these kinds of ghost stories don't often get the spotlight that the human ghost story does. They're not as dramatic or as scary, so there's been no real mass incentive to unearth and compile these on the same level as the human ghost story. Just as in life, even as ghosts, the animal takes second seat to man. What does this encounter look and feel like? I think we saw a pretty good spectrum of encounters today. In a way, it actually very closely resembles the human ghost phenomenon, residual or intelligent. Could our passed-on fur babies be ghosts? And if so, are they stuck? Based on descriptions from authors who have looked at hundreds of these accounts, these encounters and sightings are very brief, and if they are ongoing and frequently seen, they don't seem to occur for a very long span of time. So initially, I'm going to say even if an animal presents in ghostly form, for whatever reason, they aren't staying in ghostly form for long. There seems to be, again, based on what these authors are describing, a purpose or reason to their manifesting in these ways, and once that reason is accomplished, they gone, they out. And we do frequently see that with human ghost stories as well, though I imagine it's just less complicated with animals. We do, of course, have some accounts of ghostly visitations years after the fact, like my experience, or that will occur 4 years after the fact. So those may be outliers to this common experience. And perhaps it all just comes down to the animal's choice, just as I concluded it came down to children's choice. Which leads us into our final question. What are the reasons that an animal would present in ghostly form? Why would they choose to come back or stick around? That may seem like a silly question to some. An animal weighing its options and choosing? Two things I'll say about that. One, have you not listened to the telepathy tapes? And if you haven't, why not? Please do. It's terrific. The show primarily focuses on non-speaking human beings and their incredible inner worlds and abilities of communication and telepathy capabilities. Yes, you heard right. Telepathy. It's real. It's happening. We already knew this. Come on. Well, Kai Dickens also spent an episode exploring telepathic communication of animals. And just know this, these creatures are definitely communicating and thinking at times deeply about things and considering and weighing options. And if that is a shocking concept to you, might I suggest checking out the work of Ed Anderson, PhD. Thought I was going to forget to circle back, didn't ya? Ed Anderson is a clinical psychologist who was profoundly impacted by the death of his dogs. He spent decades somewhere between atheist and agnostic before finally launching into a quest to compile evidence that had convinced him to become self-described spiritual, but not religious. He came to believe in an afterlife of some sort, but without the woo. He also came to believe in animal afterlife. He arrived at these beliefs based on logic, reason, and evidence. He has shared what he's found in a book called Evidence of Animal Afterlife, published in 2021. He also has a blog by the same name that has a few really incredible dives into the evidence and arguments for animal afterlives. He does such a fantastic job tearing apart the ingrained bias of some people that animals cannot even have an afterlife based on this idea that they don't have souls, based on this idea that only humans get to have souls for a myriad of reasons that make us superior and better than animals, and we are definitely not on the same level as them here on Earth or at the soul level. Okay, you know what? Fine, maybe they do have some kind of soul, but once they die, they get sucked up into this blob group soul thing for their individual species to be recycled and spit back out to create more animals and a never-ending reincarnation wheel type thing, all for the benefit of humans, who most definitely have individual souls and individual special afterlife experiences because our souls are so special and require an actual spiritual evolutionary journey, but not animals, those dumb animatrons, nothing but meat and primal instincts, not a single thought behind them. Eyes, humans rule, animals drool. You are an egotistical prick, or are just ignorant as hell, as I was, if you think in these ways. At one time, I might have bought into the whole blob group soul thing. Thanks so much for that, Edgar Cayce. But if you don't know enough, that's easy enough to swallow. That makes sense. But it was based on my own learned biases and a misunderstanding of the inner world and emotional lives and true intelligence of animals. There's been a good effort in the past 30 years made in order to study basically all of the parameters that humans have set up to set us so far apart from the lowly animal, all of which has been disproven. Only humans use tools. Nope, not true. A lot of animals use tools. Only humans use complex language. Again, not true. Animals utilize complex language. We've just been too stupid to understand and decode it. Okay, well, then humans have a sense of morality, empathy, justice. Animals have also been shown to exhibit all of these, even across species lines. Well, but we have self-awareness, as do they. But humans have feelings and emotions. Girl, you have never loved and gotten to know an animal in your life, have you? They most certainly have feelings and emotions. Okay, fine. What about this? Humans can think and reason and have foresight. Y'all, studies show animals do this as well. And if another study needs another exhibit to prove the point, may I offer up my dog, Slater. I have literally seen him look around his surroundings for me, making sure the coast is clear, before tiptoeing to eat the thing he knows is definitely not for him. Trust me, Slater has all of the thoughts and reasoning capabilities and foresight. Look, I am going to wrap up this tirade. It's just excellent information and sound arguments, and I'm just excited to share. Go check out Ed Anderson's blog at the very least. But seriously, people who think in these ways, place the animal below the human, place the animal's soul below the human soul, or even worse, say they don't even have them at all. But we do, for some reason. It just drives me crazy. Because it just seems simple to me now that we're, all of us, humans, animals, plants, are made of the same stuff and the same energy. And I think we are a lot more alike than we are different in the physical and in the spiritual form. We are all playing with the same deck of cards here. All of that being said, if an animal has a soul, and it is individual and independent as we speculate the human soul might be, if they have capabilities to communicate and reason and think ahead and feel emotion, what's not to say they too might choose to stay near or return to the physical dimension following their death for reasons similar to our own. Out of familiarity with a place or routine, desire for closure, to right a wrong, to alleviate an owner's guilt, to save or help someone, out of a sense of duty, out of emotional attachment, out of love. Hug your dog, give your horse that extra apple, and tell your cat, I said, pss, 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 pss. That is a wrap for now. Please, won't you join me for a final note? This episode wraps our deep dives into ghosts and hauntings. Learned a lot this past year. Hope you guys picked up something new as well. Glad to have covered it at this level, and I'm really excited to put it all together at the conclusion. Today's outro will be kept short, I promise. Just a few announcements for you. First, last week, Beer Booze and Boogeyman received one hell of a shout out on TikTok. Thank you so much to Heather at Tell Me a Scary Story Podcast. Your shout out was divine, my dear. May you have everything you have ever wanted in life and more, and keep up the fantastically spooky work. I've really been enjoying your show, lady. TikTok listeners, be sure to go give Miss Heather a follow at Tell Me a Scary Story Podcast. Catch me live on Beer, Booze, and Boogeyman next week, September 3rd, 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central. The topic of discussion is near-death experiences and superstitions. Call in with your story, your thoughts, your disbelief to 208-717-1611 or submit it in writing at ghost.beer/submit. Catch it on YouTube again. That is September 3rd at 8 p.m. Central. On the topic of Beer, Booze, and Boogeymen, my dear, dear co-host Damien, otherwise known on these streets as D-Booze, needs our help, folks. Damien's current laptop is heading into the light as we speak. He has been unable to join the last few episodes outside of using the app on his phone, which is super frustrating, I know, and very limiting as far as what he can do. He has launched a GoFundMe in order to get some help procuring a very cost-effective but new and reliable laptop for his podcasting and ghost hunting needs, and I will be damned if I don't help out my friend by sharing his campaign. I have contributed to the cause. I hope you will join me in supporting a great human being by pitching in a few bucks or by sharing the campaign link that I have posted just below the episode description. Other than that, you know where to find me, at Paranorm Girl Pod on social and YouTube. Shoot me any final thoughts that you have about ghosts before the finale. I may incorporate them. Who knows? Message me at paranormgirlpod@gmail.com. Join me back here in 2 weeks for the Season 7 summation, final thoughts, announcement for our Season 8 topic that was decided by you good folks, and the date we can all expect that new season to kick off. Y'all rock. I will see you guys at the finish line. Stay safe, keep the nightlight on, and sleep with one eye open.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.